to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Bridget.
And I'm Colleen.
And today we are welcoming Patty Gale. Patty Gale is a financial therapist, life planner, and the founder and CEO of Fear.Less Girl Financial. And Colleen, you want to tell us a little more about that?
So we had a great conversation with Patty Gale. She is a financial life planner, and she actually likes to call herself the life coach meets financial planner. And I thought it was really interesting the way she approaches financial advice. We are going to start the interview, so we hope everyone enjoys this and feels a little bit better educated about their finances by the end of this conversation. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode with Patty Gale. We're excited that she's here. Patty is a financial advisor for women in midlife, and she's the CEO of Fearless Financial. When I say fearless, I mean fear.less, like you're going to fear less on the Fearless Girl Financial. So one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on is I think a lot of women are, and I don't want to use the term afraid, but intimidated with finances. They don't want to deal with them. They don't want to be... It just seems overwhelming to them. So how did you get involved in becoming a financial advisor? Oh, by the way, welcome, Patty.
So, that's a great question. Thank you, Colleen and Bridget, both for having me. I truly appreciate it. So I got started in investment management way back in the 1980s. I actually was a broadcast journalism major in college. And then it was somewhere around 1986 when I moved to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And my very first job was in the money market department of a local bank. And from there, my career just went from there to working for various investment management firms over the years. I was actually a securities trader. So I worked for firms that we had clients who were high net worth clients, a couple of celebrities, some small countries. And so my job and role was when we made big asset allocation changes was to really get what they call best execution for those clients. So I've been in financial services really since about 1986. Wow. And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really, I went through my own reinvention. So it was in 2014 when we had moved to Colorado. I'm originally from New York. And so we had moved to Colorado. We'd been living in the Midwest for many, many years. And my daughter, she looked at me one day when we were sitting having dinner and said, "Well, Mom, what is it that you really want to do?" And I was 54, getting ready to turn 54 at the time. And I had no idea. I had no idea. And so it really led to this own reinvention for me and dealing and talking with women who were going through a lot of financial upheaval, especially after 2008, that I decided that I wanted to get back into finance. I had actually left that world for a time and was doing like online digital marketing and affiliate marketing, but I really decided that I really needed to make more of an impact. And so I wanted to get back into finance, but I wasn't sure how. I knew I did not want to go back into corporate investment management. I knew I didn't want to sell investment products. And eventually financial therapy came on the radar. And that really intrigued me because I wasn't really quite sure what it meant. It's still a fairly new, not methodology, but a new genre, so to speak, of financial services. And when I started digging deeper into what financial therapy is, I was like, this is it. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Because it wasn't until I started talking with close girlfriends about some of the upheaval and things like that. Like nobody was talking about this stuff. There's a lot of shame out there. A lot of it, I will admit, is perpetrated by the financial services industry. Things like, well, if you had an emergency plan, you wouldn't be in this space. Or if you were prepared, this wouldn't be happening. And in a perfect world, yes, that would be great. But we don't live in a perfect world. And somewhere between our 20s and now, a lot of unexpected life things happened. So what I do as a financial therapist is I help women who are asking, midlife women who are saying, okay, what's next? I maybe raised my family. I've been through several career changes, maybe some unexpected career changes, possibly even a divorce or even an unexpected widowhood. And they're asking, okay, what's next for me? What's next for my life? So what the approach I take is really from a life planning approach and then helping them work through, well, what, how do you want to spend the next 30, 35 years of your life, and let's then create the financial plan to match that versus wealth building just for the sake of wealth building.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. The emotional aspect, because I mean, I don't know about you, Bridget, but I think a lot of women approach things from an emotional standpoint.
Oh, sure they do. Sure.
And feel comfortable, because you're saying just the word therapy, that connotes an emotion to it. So I think more women would probably feel comfortable saying they're talking to a financial therapist rather than saying they're talking to a financial advisor.
And I like how you brought up that it could have been created by the whole financial industry anyway. Just the shame that people will put you through if you're not doing this, if you're not doing that, if you didn't have the emergency fund. And also, I mean, I know they've stopped this, but do you guys remember in college how there would be people flagging you down to get a credit card? Like, here, you're going to get this t-shirt or get this and sign up for this. And it didn't matter if you had a job or anything to pay that back with. They were pushing that. And then that just perpetuates that. Then you're in debt. You've got this credit card debt. And then it just keeps going and going. So I could see where that just accumulated debt can happen to women when they hit midlife. There it is. And I love that you have this to help women in that stage of life.
How did you come up with the idea specifically to approach it as being fearless in midlife? Because that's a very specific concept.
It is, because many women are fearful of dealing with their finances because they're afraid that they're going to be judged. And there's a lot of emotions too, from even when we were children. If you grew up in a household where money wasn't talked about, or you were told that money is the root of all evil, which the Bible never even says that. But if you, sorry, does that go into your religion?
That's okay. No, that's funny. That's funny. I didn't even know that though.
Or if you were even in a household where children should be seen and not heard, many women, especially in our age group, you go back to the 1960s and 70s, and now even as women in their 45 and older, we never talked. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My family ran a family business, and yet I was never taught how to manage money. And how ironic is that, right? There's things wrong there. But so to me, it's fearless being, and in the dot, I know people ask me all the time, like, well, why do you spell it fear.less? You're spelling it wrong. I'm like, no, I'm not spelling it wrong. I just found a new way to identify it. So fear.less is being fearless, but fearing less. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-pronged approach to that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And then, so how do your clients find you? I was saying, how do you find your clients, but really, how do your clients find you?
So yeah, no, that's a great question. So through many various ways, because I'm a financial therapist and I'm completely unbiased, right? So I don't sell insurance and I don't sell investment products. So for a lot of women, they're afraid that they're going to be sold something by someone who's tied to a specific company and or specific in financial company. And so what I do is I partner with professionals, trusted professionals in the financial arena. And we really work together, like accountants, attorneys, other financial advisors that I trust, certified financial planners, those types of professionals, bookkeepers, other industry professionals, where we're collaborating versus competing. And then, of course, there's the internet, social media, my website, SEO, places like that.
Where do you find, when a woman walks in and she's kind of in, she, let's say she's 50 years old, she just went through a divorce, what are the common complaints, or not complaints, but questions she has?
Sure. So if she's just been through a divorce, she has a lot of questions. Hopefully she would have worked, depending on what her situation is. I mean, if she, you know, and so much is going to depend on what the outcome of the divorce was.
Right.
Right. Especially if she, does she still have children at home? So she's probably experiencing at minimum a 50% decrease in her income. Right. So for her, her questions are, well, I mean, the biggest things, of course, are, did she get to keep the house? Did she not get to keep the house? If she got to keep the house, should she keep the house? Those types of things. And a lot of that's really going to depend on the settlement from the divorce and what her income is now. Is she in a career now? If she was a stay-at-home mom for many years, this is going to be a big challenge for her because she is going to need to get back into the workforce. So there's a lot of questions like that. Her taxes, of course, are going to be different. Now, I'm not a tax professional, but her taxes are going to be different going forward. But what she needs right then and there, if she's just coming out of a divorce, is she needs something really simple. I know she has a lot of questions, but she needs very simple things that she can do unless she was the one who was very active in the finances prior to the divorce.
Mm-hmm. Do you have her kind of either, well, I guess if she's already been active, she would have some kind of form, but just to fill out what she spends a month, what her expenses are, is that like step one? Let's figure out how much money you spend a month.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely getting down to the basics. So what's your income? And let's look at your monthly expenditures. And I like to call it a spending plan versus a budget because spending plan just sounds nicer.
So it does. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, budgets even made the name word budget just makes me cringe too.
You just like it's a restriction or something.
Right, exactly.
And don't look at it because they don't, it's just overwhelming to even think of how much.
Right. Exactly. So what we would do is we would sit down and look at very, very simple, what's income versus expenses in that spending plan. And especially too, when you're talking about spending and you're talking about things like monthly subscriptions or eating out, or, I mean, for her, the essentials obviously are the roof over her head, keeping the lights on in her house, and feeding herself, and depending on if she still has children at home. But a lot of it too, like now with divorce, if she has children at home, there could be I know many states now have where both parties are responsible for a certain portion of the financial upbringing for the children. So a lot of that is taken into consideration too.
What areas, like, would you say women this age need to look at for retirement? Or just different, like, savings? What should they focus on in this age?
Sure. So in this age, and that's where I'm probably a bit different than other people, and my ideas are a little bit different than traditional financial services, because I will tell you, the idea of traditional retirement at age 65 is 140 years old.
Wow.
That I know, right? That idea actually came about in 1880. Anybody can Google it, in Germany. And it was invented. It was actually invented at a time when the German government at that time wanted to do something for, I believe, farmers and industrial workers at that time to help support them. However, at that time period, the average life expectancy of men was only about 65. So here we are 140 years later. We are living a lot longer. My great-grandparents and my grandparents lived well into their 90s, and we're a lot healthier. And we also have a younger mindset than even just two generations ago.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about retirement, I like to say, well, what do you want to look at? Because now it's your turn, right? Maybe you've raised your family and now it's your turn. So where do you want to be? What do you see your life as for the next 25, 30 plus years? And let's look at it from that perspective, because here's what you see now is, oh my gosh, if you don't have $1 million in the bank by the time you're 65, then you handled your money wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's just
not
wrong. I think that's very, how do I put this?
It's shaming.
It's a way to approach it, because the reality is many, many people are not going to have $1 million sitting in the bank by the time you're 65.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to start. And I already see in my circle, too, of other professionals are starting to see a slight shift in that ideology that, okay, this idea of retirement at 65 really is very antiquated, and we need to start thinking differently about it. Because if you don't have that kind of money by the time you're 65, what is going to make your soul sing for the next 30 years or so that you can create an income and a lifestyle that you love and be able to create the impact that you want to create while being self-sufficient? Because no woman ever wants to depend on the government, her family, or her friends when she's a senior citizen. So that's, I mean, you still have to have a plan and you still need to be investing and things like that, but it's just a slight, it's that shift in thinking that, okay, maybe this idea of retirement at 65 just really isn't relevant anymore the way it used to be 50, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to look like what your parents or your grandparents' retirement looked like at all.
Because part of that too is how many people do we know today that have actually worked for the same company for 40 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can think of any that have, you know, their whole career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yes, we still need to be saving. We still need to be investing. And again, it all boils down to that spending plan, because then you're creating that spending plan based on your definition, not what we've all been traditionally told it should be.
So if you have like someone, I think we've said, you know, it could be any life change. It could be a divorce. It could be a death in the family. And their whole, just in their 20s, 30s, they were raising children, probably barely making, or not probably, but in this scenario, barely making ends meet there, just having enough to get by, pay for a house, but not completely. They still have a mortgage, and something happens and they come to you and they really have little savings at all, just barely making it. What could you do? What would you tell a woman in that situation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And that's a hard situation, because you have to then look at not just the spending and the savings. You have to look at, well, okay, she still has a mortgage. Should she even still be in the house? Because it's not just your mortgage. You have your property taxes. You have the maintenance on the house, depending on how old the house is. You have your landscape, water, furnace, and all of those types of things. For some people, yes, I know owning a home is the quote-unquote American dream. However, there are some instances where maybe she can scale down a little bit. Maybe she can sell that house and move into a townhome that she can own, but not have the risk of not have as much maintenance and things like that. So, and then again, looking at her taxes, is she working with the right type of tax person to be able to say, are you really taking advantage of all the things you should be? And honestly, a big part of it too is, how do we increase your income?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to, you know, at some point you have to say, okay, I need to upskill my skills. Regardless of how old you are, it doesn't matter. There are women, I mean, they're even like, there are so many very, very low cost and even free online schooling that she can take to, depending on what her ambitions are and what she's good at. But you have to look at increasing income too. So it doesn't necessarily mean having to take out student loans and going back to college or master's degree or anything like that. But there's Udemy, there's Teachable, there's all of these online resources that are so free and inexpensive that if you can create more skills for yourself and be able to then increase your income, she's going to be in a much better place.
Okay. Yeah. Because I have seen that happen to different people where they find themselves in that situation.
What are some of the common mistakes that women make when it comes to their finances?
Common mistakes, you mean like from a technically or?
Even in like an investment, like let's say they have an extra $200 a month that they can invest in something. I guess, what are the common mistakes they're making when it comes to investments, or what would be a better idea to use? I mean, I'm using an arbitrary number,
sure. But
what are the common mistakes as far as investments go?
So common mistakes as
when
far
you're
as
45.
Yeah. Well, right. Exactly. So the biggest mistake is not knowing your risk tolerance. So you first have to understand, based on your, and we go, in financial therapy, we go through all different types of personality types and risk assessments and things like that. So you have to know what your risk tolerance is first. If you don't know that, you could be making a big mistake as far as investing in something that you don't have the risk tolerance for. Another mistake would be just blindly trusting some financial advisor with your $200 a month. I'm not saying that they're going to invest that haphazardly, but you need to take ownership and do some research. Do some research on what do you want to have your money look like. If you have an extra $200 a month, I personally, but for most women, you're going to look at probably mutual funds versus individual stocks, because if you buy one stock or one share or two shares or something like that, yeah, that comes with a higher risk than investing in just mutual funds where you can just keep investing that $200 like every single month. So you first have to know your risk tolerance. You first have to start doing some research. And I'm going to say, sure, that you're talking to professionals. That's the biggest thing. A lot of times we hear, oh, you know, my neighbor's cousin so-and-so said to invest in this thing. Well, is your neighbor's cousin so-and-so, are they an investment professional? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So, that's a very good point. No, absolutely. You have to know who you're talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it matter with financial advisors if they take, if they charge you hourly versus taking a percentage? Like, I love the fact that you're saying I don't work for investment companies, because a lot of times they're selling you a certain investment because they get a profit from it. Mm-hmm. Is there one you should look for over the other, one that charges you hourly versus taking a percentage of it?
Sure. No, that's a really, really great question. And so what women really want to look for, so many, many investment advisors sell either insurance or investment products for commission. And that's not a bad thing. We need those people in this industry. But when you're looking for unbiased investment advice, what you really want to look for, because, and the reason why I say that is because investment advisors who are tied to a broker, mm-hmm. okay, like whatever that brokerage firm may be, they are selling proprietary products for that firm. And like I said, it's not a bad thing, but you want unbiased advice. Right. So what you want to look for is a fee-based financial planner or financial therapist, where that person, like a fee-based only financial planner, is only going to charge you a fee mm-hmm. for investment advice. Now, some of them will have a little bit of a mix, like some of them will also hold assets under management. I don't do that. So if they hold assets under management, they may charge, this is going to get a little technical and I don't know if I want to go there. They may charge a little bit of a percentage based on the value of your portfolio on a quarterly basis. Okay. But that's totally separate.
1% of your.
Right. I mean, and that's, right. And that's totally separate from a fee-based advice. So you really want to look for fee-based advice, because they are going to be the most unbiased when it comes to your financial plan.
And that's important for women, because if you're recently divorced, if you're recently widowed, even if you are trying to start maybe saving separate from your husband, just to learn mm-hmm. how to do so, you don't know who to turn to. Right. This mm-hmm. person's saying, well, invest with me and I'll only take X percent. Some women have no idea, but now some women are very business savvy and they understand that. But if you're just kind of tipping dipping your toe into it, it's important to know which type of financial advisor mm-hmm. to look for.
Exactly. And I would say too, for a woman who really has no idea what the investment landscape looks like, go to the library. You can get books on educational material, like what is a stock, what is a bond, what is a mutual fund, how they work, things like that. There is nothing wrong with just learning those absolute fundamentals first before even thinking about talking to any investment professional, because they are going to sit down with you and ask you what your risk tolerance is. But for a lot of women who really don't know what a lot of those different things are, like what's the difference between a stock and a bond and a mutual fund, they are going to be embarrassed to talk with that investment mm-hmm. professional, and they're not necessarily going to explain to them, well, you know what? I really don't even know what this means, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so, and that investment professional is not going to know that. So you can go to the library and get basic books on, like I said, there are a few. I'm trying to think. I might be able to send some links. I mean, some just names of books, just so they can get basic, just that basic foundation of education. So at least they have some understanding of what the language is when they're talking to either a financial planner or someone like myself or an investment advisor.
And if someone does come to you with this change in their life and marital status or somebody could have lost a job, it could be anything like that. Would you advise them to pay off like debts first, like credit card debts, automobile debts, or would you advise them to do all of that? Or would you advise them to save some while paying those down?
If they had just a big major life change?
Yeah. Like, would you advise if they lost,
lost a job.
Yeah, anything, lost a job or being a widow. But let's say they had some credit card debt, they owed on a car, they have a mortgage. Should they just concentrate on paying those debts off and not put anything in savings? Or should they save some as well as pay the debts?
A lot of that's going to depend on what their financial cushion is and what their job prospects are. So like for someone who just lost a job, unless you have some job prospects lined up that you know are potentially going to pan out, or unless you have savings, what you really want to do is pay the minimum payments just so that you're not late, right? Like right now, I'm just telling people, this is not the time to be paying off major credit cards. This is the time for cash flow, right? When you're in that kind of a situation, cash flow is your priority. Okay. So, and you're going to have to look at, like, are you getting a severance? Mm-hmm. Are you filing for unemployment? Unless you know yet what those numbers are, you're just going to kind of keep the status quo until you're in a better financial position to say, okay, now, which one of these things do I want to tackle first?
Okay.
And typically, your credit cards are going to have a much higher interest rate than your car loan. So you really want to focus. If it were me, I would focus on the credit cards first because they're going to have a higher interest rate. And there's different ways to pay down credit cards. There's a snowball effect. There's paying the one with the highest interest rate. There's the one with the lowest balance. There's several different ways. So it really just kind of depends on what that individual situation is.
Okay.
And what they feel comfortable with.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because I've always read different things like pay yourself first, put stuff in savings, pay yourself first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But this is true. I liked hearing that you want to have some cash flow. But if you pay your minimum, at least your minimum, it's probably not going to hurt your credit score, right, as much.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're in that kind of, I mean, if you're under normal circumstances, yes, absolutely you want to pay yourself first. But if you're just experienced a major life event, that's where cash flow then comes your target and your priority.
Okay. That's good.
Kind of trending with Gen X women coming in that we are more savvy with our finances than maybe the generation before us?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I really think it depends. I don't think there's so much as far as like one major trend. Like I know the generation before me, I mean, women never talked about money, right? Yeah. And then I think now you're seeing a lot of the Gen Xers, like the 40s and in that age group. Yeah, absolutely. Because part of it is we didn't have social media. We didn't have people talking about this stuff. Now with the younger generation, it's the FIRE movement, wanting to retire by the time you're 30. Wow. Like what a concept, right?
You answer that, what you think of the FIRE movement, because that just makes no sense to me, but I'm curious what your thoughts, but finish your.
Oh no, that's okay. So yes, I think there are, and it really depends on who you talk to. I think there are some women that are, yes, okay, they know they need to really get more savvy and educate themselves about their finances, regardless of what age group they're in. And I'm married, and my husband and I, we have joint finances, but I also have my own. Because I like my business is my, Fearless Girl Financial is my company. And so I am a very staunch believer that every single woman, I don't care what your faith is, I don't care what color you are, I don't care what your age is, every single woman should be making her own money and keeping her own money. And I know that's a very bold statement, but the more women can make their own money, the more impact we can make for ourselves, our families, and the organizations and causes that we are passionate about. Mm-hmm. And again, no woman that I know wants to be 90 years old living with her family, not just living with her family, I shouldn't say that, but dependent on that family for their finances. I mean, that's not a place that I know I don't want to be, and I know many, many women don't want to be. So that's where we need to keep opening up these conversations. We need to stop being afraid to have the conversations. You know what? Yeah, this happened to me. Okay, now how do I move forward? Because the past is the past, right? We can't do anything about the past. The only thing we can do is how we educate and empower ourselves and each other going forward.
So, and I agree with you. What do you think of the FIRE movement for people in their late 20s and early 30s? And maybe start by explaining what it is. I don't think every person knows what the FIRE movement is.
Sure. So FIRE actually stands for Financial Independence Retire Early, F-I-R-E. And so this movement started, I'm not really sure how many years ago, where it was like, save, save, save. Live as frugally as you possibly can in your 20s. Save and just put everything away, and then you wouldn't have to work again by the time you're like 30.
I just gotta laugh at that.
Or maybe even a little bit later. And I'm kind of, and
there's people crisis like, oh, I don't know.
Like what's going on right now. Right. Taping this. Yeah.
And so as we're taping this, there's even conversation out there that, oh my gosh, is the FIRE movement now dead? Or is it going to be drastically impacted? Because are these people who have achieved that, are they working? Or are they now going to be living off of whatever they saved or investments? I don't know. You know, it's kind of like, I think back to when I was 30, I was divorced and had a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Right. Yeah, there's no retirement there.
There's no like living on a beach in wherever, somewhere. You know?
Yeah.
It just seems like you're presuming at 30 that you will not have any kind of life challenges.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And it could be illness, anything.
Right. And I don't think that's realistic. I'm going to be 60 later this year. I just don't think that's realistic because your money, that kind of money is only going to last for so long. I mean, you have to at some point, like you said, if you have a major life event, well, what do they do for health insurance? I guess I just have a hard time reconciling with the ideology. And I'm not saying there are people that aren't doing it, because apparently there are websites out there of couples and individuals who have. Mm-hmm. But the point, I guess, is, well, okay, what happens then between 30 and 80? I mean, you've got a 50-year time span there. There's a lot of life stuff that's going to happen in those 50 years. That's a half a century. So,
And just even if you invest it, like what happened recently with the stock market. Look what's happened there. And they say, I don't know, you always hear, keep it in there, it'll bounce back or whatever happens. But you just don't know, like the 2008, look what happened there. So those are things. Plus, I would just be bored. I think I would really. I mean, I love the beach. I love
years to be bored.
I love my leisure time, but I also have to do something else.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Something. I mean, absolutely. And getting to what you were saying, I mean, historically, yes, the stock market. And I will say to people, if you have a 401k or Roth IRA or anything like that, please do not be looking at it right now. Do not look at it every day. Do not even look at it every week. Because historically speaking, the stock market, yes, there are going to be corrections. There are going to be corrections. So the thing about the stock market now is, yes, it's been very volatile, and the stock market does react based on fear and emotion and things like that. But what happened with the stock market was not based on underlying economic issues. What happened with the stock market was based on a medical, historic pandemic. Mm-hmm. However, this pandemic isn't going to be affecting the economy. So I still believe that the stock market will correct itself at some point. And we will, again, once those businesses, once this all settles out, once businesses are back on track, because the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you have to understand is only 30 stocks in the whole entire country. It's really small business that fuels the economy, small and mid-sized businesses. So is this a time to sell? I would not be selling. I'm not going to give investment advice, but all I'm saying is historically the stock market is always going to be in a better position. We're still in a better position than we were after 2008 or even the stock market crash of 87.
You think we're headed towards a recession?
We will be. I mean, many, many financial analysts and people are saying yes, even other business people too. But yeah, I mean, we're probably going to be in a recession until those businesses start getting back on track, start producing what they were producing, and until the American public feels comfortable getting out and shopping again. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really interesting because we really have become such a consumer society. Mm-hmm. But however, the thing I will say is businesses and even individuals are going to have to start pivoting themselves now.
Yes.
As a household, everything's going to change. How we work, how businesses run themselves, and even the products and services they're consuming. If a business is not online now doing something, they're not going to make it. And I hate to say that in that perspective, but it's not going to be business as usual. We can no longer go by this is the way we've always done it. Because that's gone. That's over.
And yeah, you're already seeing a lot of businesses that are pivoting, getting very creative. Like, I've just been amazed at the way, I think I've talked about it before, the exercise industry has really, like Cycle Bar, we rented a bike. Like they said, we'll drop it off at your house. You can get online. All the online classes, all the online offerings have just gotten so creative. The deliveries have gotten creative. So you do see that.
With pivoting back into 45 and over women, because like we said, we're going to talk all about this on Thursday. When someone comes in and they have a decent portfolio, their investments are pretty secure, or they're not moving them. Do you recommend people as they get older to downsize or to pay off the house they have?
That depends. I mean, it's going to depend on, again, income. What is their income and what is the house? Like, is this the house that you raise five kids in and you've got a four bedroom, whatever? You probably might want to downsize, because if you've been in that, and it also depends too on how long has she been in that house. If she's been in that house for 30 years and has her mortgage paid off, if she wants to stay in the same neighborhood, she might be able to find something a little bit smaller, as long as she's not going to be carrying a big mortgage in the other house, depending on what she can sell it for. It's really, there's a lot of factors to take into that. But if she's in a position right now, and I think too, we're going to have to see how, as this economy kind of moves forward, what is the real estate market going to do? I mean, I know realtors have even changed a lot too, but there's so many different factors that it's really, you can't just have a blanket statement that says stay in your house or sell your house and downsize. Also, too, as she gets older, she may not want to deal with all the maintenance. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking about a four-bedroom house with 2.5 or 3 bathrooms and a 2.5 car garage, that's a lot for one person. Wow. I don't want to deal with it. That's a lot for one person. And then part of it, too, becomes, well, okay, it's a big house. If she's living by herself, what is the security on the house? Does she have a security system on the house? And there's just so many different factors. I mean, downsizing is not a bad thing as long as it makes economic financial sense for your household.
Let's also say this is a woman whose things have gone pretty well for her, and she has enough money to take care of everything and put things aside. Do you think that she should, what are some suggestions, like to advance in retirement, or should she put stuff towards college for her kids? What are things you would advise there?
So, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying maybe smart investment tips for the
I mean, I would say continue investing, continue smart investing. I mean, for college students, that's really hard, because are they going to a private college? Or are they going to a public college? Are they going to community college versus a four-year university? Are they able to get scholarships and all of that? And that's interesting, because we're kind of in that space right now. Like, my daughter's 19. So she decided to go her first year at community college. She was actually, her original plan was 2 years at community college, and then she was going to transfer. Well, she decided after one semester of community college, she wanted to apply to the school she wants to transfer to. She got accepted, and now she's got scholarship money and all of that, which is great. We're still going to help her somewhat, but, and this is just my own personal opinion, I truly believe that they have to have some skin in the game as a college student. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm not saying that they should go out and take out $200,000 in student loans or anything like that, but if you feel that you want to help your kids, help your kids, but don't do it at the risk of your current situation or your senior years.
Okay. That's it. So I like that. That's
kind of put advice. The oxygen mask on yourself first.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I've seen where there are too many people who were taking out retirement money or 401ks to pay for college kids' education. And I personally don't believe that that's a smart move, because you've spent all those years investing. Right. And not only are you losing out on future growth, but you're also paying interest and penalties on that too, mm-hmm. when you withdraw prematurely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing a financial trend with the midlife women that their adult kids are living with them still?
Not so,
they're still financially supporting, kind of leading from that question.
I personally have not. I know there are some, depending on what that situation was. I mean, but in my arena and, you know, in my circles and environment, I have not seen that.
Because we do see a trend for people that seem to financially still be supporting their children. I mean, we still help our kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a generational thing. Like, I'm trying to figure out the mindset behind it. Mm-hmm. Because I think as we grew up, it wasn't like we
get help.
Our mm-hmm. parents were going to support.
Oh, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't know if it's a trend of just Generation X, or is the next generation going to be
worse? Well, yeah, I don't know with that one, Colleen. I do think the difference between like what the pay is for what the expense is, it hasn't caught up. It hasn't evened up. Yeah.
Right. I mean, real estate right now, and even we see this here in Colorado too, you have a real estate market that is ballooning. Mm-hmm. And you have a workforce that, like here in Colorado Springs, is a lot of ministries, call centers, food service, and obviously we're a big tourist state. Colorado Springs is obviously a big tourist city, mm-hmm. but you don't and we have military. We have a very right. big military presence too. So if you're a military contractor, you've got it made if living in Colorado Springs. But if you're, like for me, and with what I do, if I wanted to go to work for an investment firm, I'd probably have to travel back and forth to Denver every day, which is 70 miles one way. We don't have the large or national type of companies here for that type of income. There's just a very, and I know Colorado Springs isn't the only city like this either. There's a very, you know, you've got real estate way up here now, and you've got income levels that are totally out of balance, and it's just not sustainable. Mm-hmm. So I think what you were saying, Colleen, in those types of situations, yeah, you probably are going to see people who are like, you know what, I can't afford $2,000 a month on a one-bedroom apartment making $15 an hour, especially with these. But again, too, then it comes back to, okay, well, that's the situation. How can we get you upskilled?
Mm-hmm. Right. Going back to, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to go back to income.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to get in touch with you to talk about their financial therapy, to have some financial therapy.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. They can just go to the website, fearlessgirlfinancial.com. And down in the bottom, I have a contact link that will take them to a page. I'm going to be adding a scheduling page soon for where they can actually schedule appointments. But yeah, they can just write off the website.
And we will have that in the show notes as well.
Right. Okay. And I really advise that, because you have some great material on there. I looked at that and the midlife money love assessment, all the things you have on there. I was like, these are such great questions. So I would advise it to anyone, even if you feel financially secure. It's a great thing to look at and just look at the questions and answer that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm all about midlife reinvention. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we create your life plan for what you want for the next however years for now and then? And how then do we create that financial plan to make it happen?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Patty, for coming.
Yes.
We appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thank you both so much for having
thank
me.
Thank you, Patty. Yes.
We will speak soon. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to thank Patty Gale so much for coming today and talking to us. And I know after talking to her personally, I feel a little bit more in control, a little bit more at ease. And I'm not too concerned, but I have my concerns. But I think just talking to her just to help women if they're facing any kind of a change. I think this is going to be very helpful for them.
And to give them options. I think women, even if we're not going through necessarily a change, but just want to be feel more in control of our finances, you don't know where to start. You don't want to go to the bank and be like, can someone teach me how to do my finances? You know what
right,
I mean?
Like, right, right. Like don't do that now. Yeah.
But if you want to feel more in control about it, there are options out there that aren't necessarily financial advisors. But therapists, which I just love the term financial therapy.
Right.
We're going to sit you down and make you feel like you're not stupid. Here's what you know. So we appreciate that. And we hope that it gives a little bit sense of control for people right now.
And an out of relief control. And control. Yes.
Exactly. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please follow us on all forms of social media, like we always say. And make sure you're subscribing to the podcast. We don't always say this, but press that little subscribe button right next to our picture on the podcast platforms, because that helps us with all those fun little algorithms and all that
fun stuff.
We understand, but we know it's important.
Yeah.
Something about reviews and five stars and
all that stuff. Yeah.
In algorithms. Yes. Again, I wish they had an algorithm therapist.
Wow. If any of you are an algorithm therapist, there you go. There's your niche. This is what you can do during this time. Yes.
You need to find someone who's doing this. So please email us if you are an algorithm therapist. So we hope you're all safe and healthy, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.